Welcome back to another episode of Women Blazers. I'm your host, Deanna Witter, and I'm excited to have Catherine Carlson as our featured guest. Catherine serves as the Senior Vice President of Revenue and Strategy for the Philadelphia Eagles of the NFL. You'll hear Catherine share her amazing journey, which started 30 years ago in her home country of Australia, where she fell in love with sports. As a student of the industry, she came to the States to earn her master's at UMass. And instead of heading back home, she set fire to a new path, fueled by perseverance and passion, that has provided her the opportunity to live out an amazing career and life, leading revenue and partnerships for Disney and with teams in the NBA and NFL. I want to take a moment to thank Turnkey ZRG for supporting Women Blazers. Turnkey ZRG is a top talent search firm in sports, entertainment, and media. We appreciate Turnkey's role in advancing gender equity in our industry.
Thank you for having me today. I really appreciate it. This is fun. I love the cause. I love that you're promoting women out there in our industry, and that's dear to my heart. So thank you for that.
Absolutely. So Catherine, you went to Deakin University in Australia. You're originally from Australia, which I learned just a moment ago. Love to hear just, you know, your background, you know, growing up in Australia, and then what inspired you to go to Deakin University? What was it about this university that attracted you to go there?
If you know a little bit about Australia, you will find that we're a sports obsessed country. And so grew up playing sports, watching probably what you would call non-traditional American sports like rugby league, Australian rules football, cricket, playing field hockey, all sorts of different sports. So just was just such a passion of mine. I loved sports. I played it as a youngster. I was a field hockey player amongst other sports. But so I started my journey in sports close to 30 years ago in Australia. And somehow I probably have the most untraditional career path to getting to an NFL role compared to my peers across the NFL as I look across the landscape. So loved sports, and I knew it was always in my destiny to play and to work in sports. So when you ask about Deakin University, so when I started my college career, this was back in the early 90s, sports management was actually a relatively new degree. In fact, we were part of the first group in Australia ever to complete a business sports management degree. So it was really bringing sports into the business realm. And it was sort of very much a groundbreaking thing in Australia at the time. And, you know, I think it was the beginning of, quite frankly, of a new level of professionalism and doing that sports specific degree in our industry. So that was the sort of reason that my career path started off in this direction.
Definitely. And so once you graduated, you actually have some really awesome and unique, great sports break-in moments. And so the first you worked for the Victorian Rugby League as administration manager, and then you worked for the Australian Hockey Association as a program manager. Now, how did you break into these two opportunities, and what did you learn from those two experiences?
Well, what I've realized in our industry is that it's very competitive. And I say this to any student or intern or graduate trying to break into the industry, is you need to get experience before you graduate. And that means hustling in the summers to get internships, volunteering in sports organizations or whatever the career path in sports you want. And so I did a ton of internships leading up to my first job. I worked part-time at the Australian Institute of Sport Golf Program. I was working for the Australian Baseball League for a bunch of Americans in the office. So maybe that was a window into my future. Little did I know back then. But so I started off in rugby league. That was my first ever experience in sports. It was an interesting experience. We were trying to develop the sport of rugby league in Melbourne, which was very much an Australian rules town. And really with the goal of developing a pro team in the future. which they do have one now, so that's great to see. But I was the only woman in the entire organization. So this was my first step into sports, and I was the only woman. And, you know, it's difficult when I didn't have a great knowledge of rugby league, and, you know, you don't have that credibility when you're getting into that first job. And so I actually, and this is probably my mentality and gives you a glimpse of who I am, but I'm determined to figure it out, and I'm curious enough and hungry enough to learn more. And so during my time early on at the rugby league, I actually went out and got my rugby league coaching certification. And I'll tell you why, is because I was sick of hearing, what does a woman know about rugby league? And I said, that's it. So I enrolled myself. I've never actually practiced as a rugby league coach, so don't ask me some strategy on the game, but I did it because it helped gain instant credibility. And so that is why I started that. So that was really fun, working in rugby league, learning about the sport, learning about more on the grassroots side of the sport. But that led me to working for the Australian Hockey Association. So that's actually the national governing body for field hockey in Australia. We don't have a lot of ice hockey in Australia. So I was actually at a very young age, probably 22 at the time, I was asked to come in as the program manager and really manage all the national team's travel and to do the day-to-day logistics of the National Hockey League. So the field hockey in Australia is a huge participant sport. It's one of the, it's a very popular sport in Australia, and we had a National Hockey League. And so at a very young age, I was leading the logistics and operations of the National Hockey League. And we actually prepared the men's field hockey team for the Atlanta Olympics. So got to be part of preparing an elite team to go to the Olympics. And that was a lot of fun on that. But totally different experiences to what I do now.
Yeah, I bet. And yeah, what an incredible experience and, you know, sort of break in and beginning of career. And I love what you said too in the very beginning about your time with rugby league in terms of, you know, wanting to go beyond sort of the perception that you didn't know anything about rugby and that, why are you in this room? And you're like, well, I'm going to prove that I can learn it and I can do it and I'm going to dive into it head first. And I think that's fantastic. And it's interesting, like across our entire industry, we learn so much at school, but there's so much more to learn. It doesn't matter what role or what league or anywhere you're at, even in the market, learning about your markets that you're in, you got to take those extra steps sometimes. Just to make yourself more well-rounded.
I think that's a misconception of a lot of young students coming up or starting out in the industry. They want to get their perfect job first out of the, you know, first job out of college. And sometimes, you know, a career path is not necessarily linear upwards. So it can take sideways steps and, you know, maybe you get the skills, but maybe it's not in your passion point. But learning those skills is so, so important for later in life. And I think sometimes, you know, I see young, you know, interns coming out, I want the perfect job and I want my first job to be in the NFL. Well, there's a lot of other great ways to gain experience and then jump into something like the NFL. So I always give that advice to folks or looking for a change in their career as well. So it's important advice.
Now, after your time with the Australian Hockey Association, I see you make a move to the States and you pursue a master's at UMass. Love to hear sort of what determined and what were the thought processes that motivated or inspired you to make this move away from your home country into the United States.
Yeah, look, I think I'd always look to the U.S. as a leader in sports. You know, professional sports in the U.S. was just very intriguing to me. You know, big TV audiences, huge broadcast rights, sponsorship, entertainment, big personalities. You know, it was significant, very different to sports in Australia. And, you know, I predominantly in my early years had worked in more the grassroots and semi-professional sports in Australia. So it was a little bit on a whim, but I was just curious enough to investigate what could I do in the States. And I thought, you know what, let's go. I packed up my two suitcases and moved to the US to pursue my master's degree at UMass. And that was, you know, just a life-changing moment to come here. it's funny, my first impression. So I, when I was at UMass, I had a grad assistantship to help, you know, with tuition and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I ended up being a grad assistant for the Mullins Center, which is the athletic center at UMass where, you know, the basketball team plays. So I didn't know anything about NCAA before moving to the US. And I show up to UMass. I'm working all the basketball games. This was about a year after UMass made it to the Final Four back in the Calipari days, and had no concept of how huge college sports was. So it was so eye-opening for me because college sports doesn't really exist in Australia. It's predominantly club-based. And so to come into this machine and work for a college and see how it all works was just fascinating. So learn a lot. You know, for me, doing my master's degree, it was all eye-opening because I'm learning the American way, learning all about, you know, the economics of professional sports, learning about how stadiums are financed, like all of this stuff that just wasn't available to me in Australia. So I did plan on going back, but then I landed an internship and ended up staying here.
Right. And that was going to say, that's what was interesting is you know, while you're completing your master's, you land this incredible internship with Disney's Wide World of Sports. You know, how did that opportunity present itself to you? And what was, obviously, I can't even ask what was intriguing about Disney. So
yeah,
great opportunity indeed. But, you know, how did you land this opportunity?
Well, being a typical Australian, we love to travel, explore, and be adventurous. And so, of course, the moment I had a break, our winter break at UMass, I decided to travel around the US. I wanted to see this country. I thought I was only staying for a year or so, so I thought I might as well maximize my time here. And as I was traveling around the country, somehow I landed in Orlando for around, I think it was around the holiday time. And I'm sort of a bit of a sports nut, so I investigated and looked at, I realized there was a big sports complex at Disney. So, of course, I make a few calls and end up getting a tour of the Wide World of Sports. And I met this British guy, Patrick Dix, who to this day runs the soccer program at Disney's Wide World of Sports, a brilliant guy. And I was just curious and asked him all about, how do I get a job to work here? This would be amazing. And he said, well, they actually have internships. It's a great, you know, first step into working for Walt Disney World. And we hire a lot of our interns. And so I said, this sounds fantastic. Because back then, Disney's Wide World of Sports had only been open for 1 year. And yeah. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to do that. So once I finished my 5 weeks of traveling around the US, I landed back at college for the second semester and decided to apply for the internship at the Wide World of Sports and landed the position and then packed my bags after finishing my degree and headed to Orlando. So I thought it was a great opportunity. But how can you turn it down? An opportunity to work for Disney,
with right,
the brand. There's just nothing like this in Australia. So it was a really, really cool and unique opportunity.
Yeah, it seemed like an incredible one. And that internship ended up, you know, leading to an almost 6-year opportunity for you where you served as a sports programming manager and sports sales manager as well. You know, what did you most enjoy about your almost 6 years working for that division of Disney?
Yeah, look, Disney is just known for its world-class customer service. It's known for excellence and, you know, on the training that they put our staff through. It was just a really incredible experience. I learned a ton about what it means to provide excellence in customer service, but still working in sports. So it was really like melding two and really incredible skills together. So I really enjoyed my internship and then obviously my full-time roles there. But I started more on the event side of the business. I was overseeing and working on the Walt Disney World Marathon, which is now a mega business for Disney and the Run Disney program that they have down there, but worked on more of the events, attracting athletes to come to Walt Disney World through sports. And I think it was I learned a lot there because the Wide World of Sports really acts like its own sports tourism, or it's almost like a sports tourism entity. And so really the goal is, how do you attract athletes through sports to come and visit Walt Disney World? And it was really a brilliant business model. So I learned about how to create events, you know, kids kids will come down to their national basketball championship, or little Johnny's going to play in his soccer tournament. And we actually found that the wide world sports was very recession proof, primarily because kids, and we've just seen this through COVID, like people, you know, they'll give up their family vacation, but if their kid's playing in a sports tournament, they're going to make every effort to try and do that. And so it was a really interesting business model. And in my latter part time at Wide World of Sports, I spent time doing more on the business development side, like how can we create events or bid on events to come to Disney? And so I spent some time and really started enjoying the deal making side, like how can I convince this event that's been, you know, hosting their tournament in Daytona Beach for the last 20 years, how do I convince them to move their event to Disney and have that experience? And so I had a lot of fun creating more on the business development side, figuring out how can I create a magical experience for their event and transform their event by bringing it to Walt Disney World. So that was really my first foray into business development and really looking at how I could grow the Disney business through sports, which was a really fun, you know, fun brand to do that with.
Yes, absolutely. Following your time with Wide World of Sports, you actually stay with the Disney family and you make a move to Walt Disney World to be their business development manager. So you're taking those skills that you learned and now you're rolling it into the bigger entity of Walt Disney World. You know, what inspired this move? Was this an internal promotion or is this considered like a completely new position because of the two different entities?
Yeah, so I took an interesting leap of faith. I had a passion for sponsorship. It was something that I just always wanted to get involved in, and there weren't any opportunities at the time. So I took on an opportunity to be a business development manager for Epcot, one of the theme parks at Disney. Mm-hmm. And my job was to drive sponsorship revenue for the theme park, and specifically through tentpole events. So they had Epcot Food and Wine Festival, the Flower and Garden Festival, a whole bunch of different events throughout the year. And so my job was really to drive that incremental revenue. But I also had the opportunity to find sponsors for the individual themed countries within Epcot. So if you're familiar with Epcot, it has 11 themed countries. And so I also had the opportunity to go out and work with authentic brands to those countries. So I'll give you an example. I pursued Twinings Tea for the England Pavilion. Mm-hmm. And, you know, different brands that were from those different countries. So that was a lot of fun, which led me to traveling the world. I got to do some incredible things, traveling with our Walt Disney World Imagineers and creating experiences. So it was one of the most amazing times working with an Imagineer, because they're, if you're not familiar with them, they are the creative behind every ride, every experience, everything at Walt Disney World. And so, you know, I spent a lot of time on the road with the Imagineers, traveling the world, and got to see how they created. They didn't just come up with an exhibit, or they didn't just come up with a shop. They would theme it and they would have the story behind it. And I think really at the end of the day, when you're driving revenue, you're not just sales, you're in the business of storytelling. And yeah. So what we did is we worked with these brands, and in this case it happened to be countries, and bringing their experiences to Epcot and creating a story. And you know, they would pay significant seven-figure numbers for a 45-day festival, and so they were pretty significant partnerships that we would create and tell the story. And I really think that's has stuck with me to this day. When I pitch a deal or I'm pitching a big sponsorship, there's always a story as part of that, and that's who I am. And I think a lot of that I learned through working with our Imagineers and the importance of that storytelling to present the idea or the concept that you're trying to sell from a partnership standpoint. A lot of fun.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun. And I mean, absolutely, if you want to immerse somebody into an experience, you've got to be able to tell their story in a way that, you know, connects and engages with the client, or, you know, with the fan that's experienced, or the guest, I guess, in this example. Mm-hmm. And storytelling is so powerful in that moment. And love that you utilize it even today. I would imagine that was a big takeaway from you. from your time there at Disney. No, after 5 years working at Walt Disney World, traveling the world, oh my goodness, I'm so jealous. You make another move and you actually now get your sort of professional sports break and moment still there in Orlando with Orlando Magic, becoming the director of corporate partnerships. What was it about this opportunity that said, okay, I'm going to leave Disney and I'm going to take this incredible opportunity with the Magic?
Yeah, I mean, it was nice that it was in my backyard. And quite frankly, I missed my passion point of working in sports. And so when the Orlando Magic were building a new arena, Amway Center, I was approached by a gentleman, Chip Bowers, who was the VP of corporate partnerships at the time. He's fairly well known in the industry. He's actually the president of Elevate right now. And we met through a mutual friend, and he said, you know what, we're opening this new arena, but I want to approach sponsorship differently. And so he says, I like the way you approach it at Disney. It's not just putting signs everywhere. It's creating a story, creating a themed area, creating opportunities to tell the story without just sticking signs up everywhere. And so I think he was attracted to, you know, bringing me on board to bring a little Disney magic, excuse the pun, on how we approach partnerships. And, you know, when you're building a brand new stadium, that's a really, you know, you hopefully only do that once in your career, because building a new stadium is quite an endeavor. And for us, it was exciting for me because I got to build, like, I had a blank slate. Yeah. And so I think probably one of the most stressful times ever in my career is we built out 22 entitlement areas in the space of 6 months and did them with that Disney flavor. And I think that was a really fun transition into pro sports, but using a lot of what I was doing at Disney and bringing it to pro sports was just really, really a fun start to that side of the business. So really enjoyed it.
I imagine. And what were some of your early like takeaways from this like first sports, like big sports experience for you? What were some of those early takeaways that you recall?
I really remember, because at Disney, our corporate partners or alliances, we call them at Disney, were massive deals. They were long, long-term deals, very significant investments for the brands. And, you know, the deals would take sometimes 2 or 3 years to eventuate. So coming to the Magic, the pace was incredible from what I was used to. I'll never forget my first year at the Magic. We were in the NBA Finals against the Lakers, and we made it to the finals. I think on Tuesday we had a verbal agreement with a brand to be our presenting partner of the playoffs. By Wednesday we had a press release out, and by Thursday we had the contract. Or I think maybe it was flip flopped. And I thought, I just sat back and thought, wow, that just happened in 3 days. This is incredible. I love this. This is fun. And it, you know, we had a lot more partnerships, and the variety of the brands that we're working with were very different, and got into a lot of, the concepts were the same, but in a different, industry. And so the learning curve was steep at the very start, but then really it started to work, and we really got a brand new stadium up and running, and that presenting sponsor went off without a hitch. So the pace going from corporate more on the property side to the team side was quite a ride for the first
time. I can imagine. I'm sure that obviously the playoffs and, you know, the height of the teams, like when you have those opportunities, you really got to leverage them.
Oh, absolutely.
Double job with that. So during your time with the Magic, you know, you ended up growing from the director to the SVP of partnerships and premium activations over the course of your time there. What was your approach to internal growth?
Yeah, look, I'm a big proponent of being a student of the industry. I think you should be learning every day and getting better every day. So I just absorbed. I love learning. I love seeing what other brands are doing. I love seeing what other teams are doing, different leagues. I'm probably obsessed with LinkedIn because I love the fact that LinkedIn, you know, we have so many interesting updates that you're not getting in traditional media, and seeing what your peers and friends across the industry are doing. So that, I think being a student of the industry, you need to be innovative, and to be innovative, you need to know what's the landscape. And so to me, being strategic in that sense, and I wasn't afraid to take on new projects, try new things. I loved it when we were the first to do something in the industry, because that meant, that meant we were being innovative. And sometimes when you're on a team that's, you know, in a mid-sized market, I think we were the 17th largest media market, in a very transient city, you almost have to be more creative and innovative to get the attention of brands. And so for me, that was, I think I encouraged my staff to continually learn, take on professional development opportunities. I love mentoring staff and quite frankly, giving them a seat at the table and making them feel included. I'll never forget this one example, and I learned this from Chip, my former boss. Mm-hmm. We were pitching a brand in Seattle, and I was the director, and I had my manager who managed the account on a day-to-day basis. And he said, "You should bring him with you, because you never know when he's going to be leading this team one day." And we went, we had a really tough negotiation, got the deal done, but that manager at the time is now heading up partnerships at the Magic now. And so just that inclusiveness and allowing people a seat at the table, I felt like I left a good legacy or created good bench strength. So when I left, the team didn't skip a beat, and we had staff that could take on my role and continue to grow in their own career paths. So I just, yeah, I was always willing to take on more and learn about, I didn't know much about premium and took on that that aspect of our business and a little bit of your world in the ticketing side. So, but it was great. I wasn't afraid. I didn't know anything about that part of the business, but took it on and continued to grow and mentor and grow my team into the professionals they are today.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, obviously, to your point, you know, leadership and learning go hand in hand, and what we pass on to our team is so important, because it's a reflection of your own growth as well. But I love that you emphasize the legacy that you leave there in Orlando. So after 10 years with the Magic, you make a move in 2019 to join the Philadelphia Eagles of the NFL to serve as the SVP of Revenue and Strategy, where you are today. You know, what was it about this opportunity that inspired you to basically go for it?
Yeah, I quite honestly, I wasn't really looking for a new role. I'd always had a dream to take on a chief revenue role, but hadn't really seen the right opportunity. And sometimes they say timing is everything. And ironically, my husband, his company had an office here in Philly, and he had an opportunity to relocate. And right at that time, the Eagles had reached out about this opportunity, and as they say, the rest is history. So it really worked out. You know, it's hard when you have a partner in crime and your husband or your better half that also has a career, and our industry is a little bit more geographically constrained than most. And so, you know, sometimes a promotion means moving out of the town or the city that you live in or state. And so this just happened to all align. And I had the opportunity to spend time with the Eagles ownership and President Don Smolenski, and was really impressed with the organizational culture. It was something that I was maybe looking for, and seeing the number of women executives on the leadership team was just, it was unusual in the NFL. And so that was it was a selling point, if I'm being honest. And so I took a leap of faith and did it. And I remember looking on my LinkedIn feed about the time I was contemplating this opportunity. I vividly remember seeing a quote from Richard Branson from Virgin Group, and it said something like this: "If someone offers you an amazing opportunity and you are not sure that you can do it, say yes and learn how to do it later." And I thought, you know what? Now's the time. Let's try this. And I was it was, haven't turned back. It's been an incredible journey at the Eagles so far. Although I did come in a year after they win the Super Bowl. So I don't know. I'll get a ring one day.
Your timing. It's all about that timing.
That was the only timing that's off.
I love it. And I like that you mentioned that the Eagles have a lot of women leading the organization, and that was something that attracted you to the opportunity, but also made you more excited about it amongst your peers, which is great. And something that we don't often see, obviously, in the NFL and any of our leagues. And so I like that you often emphasize that.
And we it's not just in leadership, it's a seat at the table and driving the strategy for the team. So, you know, we have women executives, you know, heading strategy and revenue, myself, heading marketing, heading our legal, you know, heading our foundation. So we really have some strong women leaders, and they have a seat at the table because they are strong women leaders. And that's an empowering thing at the Eagles. And I really love that fact.
That's great. Do you guys have women initiatives and groups or ERGs that you guys are associated with?
We have started an unofficial, we call it Philly, Women of Philly Sports group. There's about 100 of us because we have about five different professional sports teams here in the Philadelphia area. And so we catch up on a quarterly basis and work together. So I'm the ringleader of that, and, you know, want to give all levels from entry level to executives a forum to like continue their professional development. So that's something that was sadly lacking here in the Philadelphia area, and we have brought that. It's a very unofficial organization, but it's amazing the turnout. Every time we do an event, we get incredible show rates and just a really great group of women that continue to want to grow and develop in this space.
That's incredible. That's great. I love that that you're dedicating time and investing time in the development of others and other women. Would never doubt that that was never the case. And you know, I think it's fantastic how you've come together with other women across, you know, other sports teams in the Philadelphia area. So I'll continue to keep an eye out for your official announcements and some of the things that you guys develop. Always looking for best practices in that space. People often are curious, you know, the differences between our different leagues. You know, I get questions about the different leagues I've even worked in. And just curious for you, you know, how would you describe the difference between how you've led your revenue strategy in the NBA versus the NFL?
Yeah, I think it's been an interesting transition. You know, the Eagles are unique, especially in the fact that they're located in the fourth largest media market, and just the strength of the Eagles brand is incredible. We probably have about 10 million followers across our social media footprint, and it's just very powerful. I think people from Philadelphia bleed green, and just the strength here, and we don't have a ticket problem. So, you know, I come in as, you know, heading up revenue, and really, you know, we sell out. We're 100% capacity with our season ticket members. They renew at 99.7% or something crazy like that. So, and we have 20,000+ on our waiting list. So it's a very different environment from a revenue standpoint. So really my focus is pivoted more to how do I grow corporate partnership revenue and look for new revenue streams on the premium side. So we're actually just opening up a club post-COVID coming up this upcoming season, which we built out during COVID. So that's a membership only club because we didn't have seats to sell. So we're looking at a club that has a membership base and like premium amenities for our fans. So then if I switch to the NBA, coming from a market that's, you know, the 17th largest market and very transient, you know, we had to hustle to sell tickets to every game. Plus you have 40 odd home games on an annual basis. So the focus is game to game. How do we sell out this game? How do we continue to grow our season ticket member base? How do we continue to look at retention of our season ticket members? And so there's quite a contrast between the two. And so just very different strategies. And if you look at our marketing, our head of marketing for the Eagles, she doesn't have to focus on transactional marketing. She's focused on brand building and fandom. And how do we you know, build our fandom and generate content. And so her focus is very different to what her counterpart would have been at the Magic in terms of that transactional and continuing to build the fans. So they're the sort of the biggest differences from a revenue standpoint. Obviously, you know, the NFL's TV ratings warrant some pretty significant partnership numbers. So it's just a different animal. And they're both fun to work in. The Eagles brand strength has been very much eye-opening. And you see the value of putting an Eagles brand on a packet of Tostito chips versus non, and you see the uplift in price, in sales. And that's just a simple example of just that there is a real uplift with putting Eagles branding on, whether it's consumer goods or whether it's, you know, endorsements or official status of a, you know, of a brand of the Eagles. So it's very strong, and we see the power of the brand here.
Yeah, I mean, into your point, I mean, the power of the brand and brand alignment for any consumer good or any organization that looks to going to partnership with you, they're going to see the return on that investment probably immediately. And your season is obviously much shorter than the NBA schedule, so you're going to see the impact of that on a shorter scale and calendar year than you would, for an NBA team or let's say MLB team or myself in the MLS market situation. So it's that instant gratification on that investment that I've always been really curious to see the impact of that as well.
Yeah, definitely. It's a lot less games to attend on an annual basis. I won't lie. That's a nice factor about working.
It's definitely a benefit. Looking back on your career path, what has been something that has probably been the most memorable experience for you? And I can only imagine, just based on what I've learned already from your career path, I imagine there's more than one, but if you had to really like put your finger on one that's like the most memorable, what would that be?
Yeah, there's probably a couple. I mean, my first season of Magic, we went to the NBA Finals. It was that just immense sense of euphoria being part of a finals run. We pretty much got swept 4-1 in that series, but I saw Kobe Bryant lift the trophy in our stadium, which I hated, but at the time, but I respected him and the team. But that was pretty magical being part of that. And I just joined the Eagles and we're one season removed from Super Bowl wins, so as I said earlier, I'm hoping that I see that championship ring on my finger one day. But so many things in my career that I've had opportunities. I think big wins from a professional, selling the jersey patch for the Magic jersey was incredible. And then some of the things that already some wins at the Eagles and being part of a team, a really great team here, and some of the things we've done in the legalized sports gambling space has been pretty special to see it all come to fruition.
And then also, obviously looking back on your path, what has been the biggest challenge you faced and what did you learn from it?
Hands down, I think you would probably say the same thing, but, navigating COVID this past 18 months and, leading a team of 29 staff from my house, and I'd only known them all for a year before we went virtual or work from home. And, I think it was the first time ever that all sports stopped around the world. That is, I've seen sports, maybe have a pause because of a lockout or pause because of, something going on around the world, but never all sports around the entire world coming to a screeching halt. And I think navigating the uncertainty of the NFL season this past year was challenging, but also rewarding at the same time. I think the thing that got me through it, quite frankly, was three critical things: communications, like over communicating with the clients and staff, transparency, and then flexibility.
Yeah.
You have to be flexible with clients. If you wanted to go to the letter of the letter of the contract and stick with that with a client, then you're really not looking at the long-term relationship. And I think clients appreciated that. I feel like we're a year removed now. We're heading into a season with full stadiums, full fans, and people and brands remember that, and they know and they appreciate what we all went through together. Because I think it you know, we were dealing with things that none of us had ever experienced before. You know, there's a force majeure language in a contract, but no one ever contemplated playing games in front of no fans. And so, right. You know, we've learned so much from that. And I think we will be better coming out and heading into this season and figuring out, you know, how we get back to business. I think we're all excited about getting back, seeing stadiums with full of our crazy Eagles fans.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. I do share in that, that challenge. And these past, you know, 16, 18 months have been, so challenging, but, you know, at the same time, there's some things that, came out of it in terms of our relationships with our partners, have definitely evolved in a way where, you know, we've kind of gone through something together. They also had, you know, to your point, like every, not just sports, but the whole world stopped and their business has stopped as well. And so
I think sometimes when you go through adversity with a client or even your staff, it makes you stronger on the back end.
Yes,
there's something about it. You know, sports brings people together and you know, the COVID situation brought us together with our clients to be problem solvers. Mm-hmm. Okay, we couldn't deliver what we promised, but let's problem solve this and figure out what we can. And then what does that look like on a go forward basis? So I think that was the silver lining of COVID. I think our relationships are stronger with our partners because we did the right thing.
Yes. Well, and you just used a pun. I don't know if you know, it was a Silver Linings Playbook. Isn't that the movie that features your team?
Oh, yes. true.
I love that movie. So switching gears here, you've mentioned that, you know, when you're talking about your move to even Philadelphia, you know, you're married and you're a wife, you're a mother of small children. Love to, you know, go to the conversation, talk about lifestyle a little bit. One thing that I've been focused on this podcast is sort of throwing out this concept of work-life balance, and really just focusing on the fact that we each structure our lives so it fits for us and the people in it. I'd love to hear from you a little bit about how you structure your lifestyle with your family to make it work.
Well, I always start off that I always like this question. I always start off with a quote, and every time I share this, people say, "Oh, hang on, let me write that down."
I'm getting my pen ready.
All right, get your pen ready. So, I always say to this: there's no such thing as Superman or Superwoman in this case. We all have holes in our cape. So many people truly believe you can have it all. I do believe you can have it all, but maybe just not all at once. So I say that because there is no work-life balance. We wouldn't be doing sports if we didn't love it. There's long hours in professional sports. But I do think there's one thing that COVID has taught us. And I think there is a little bit more work-life balance or lifestyle. It's probably, I actually think lifestyle, I love the way you use lifestyle as the question, because I think we feel like before COVID, working from home was kind of like, not frowned upon, but maybe, are you really working from home?
Right.
And so I think what we've realized is, by the way, we ran a whole season working from home. I think I went to the stadium once. We had fans in our, you know, our stadium for three games. But it made us realize we operated very efficiently and very effectively working from home. And we could still pick up our kids at the bus stop after school, or maybe actually be home for dinner and starting cooking versus sitting in an hour commute to get home. And so to me, that's an interesting lifestyle change. And, you know, as we start to return to full sports of life after COVID, what does the work environment look like? And I think that there has to be a slightly different approach to how we approached work-life balance prior to COVID. And, you know, the Eagles, we're returning to the office. So we don't say we're returning to work, because we've been working the whole time. We're returning to the office in mid-July, but we're going to have some flexibility. And I think that is, I think that's really important, as I think people have realized I can be very effective and efficient even if I'm working from home and I have a little bit more balance. And I'm very supportive of this. I think you always wonder, does that impact culture if you're not all together every day? And I think when you have a strong culture to begin with, that is not the case. And so I'm curious to see how it all goes when we head back to the office on a more full-time basis. But the key word there is flexibility. We want to be flexible. And we know that in professional sports, you work long hours. And, you know, we want to be flexible with our staff to continue to create that balance that we all strive for.
And then also to touch on, you know, to your point, like you can you know, get your work done, but also, you know, take your child to the bus stop and be at things that we likely miss. You know, I'm a mother of three. And even now, so we're back in the office as of last Monday, and my daughter has camp at 9 a.m., you know, on Tuesday. It's like, I'm not even hesitating that I'm going to drop her off, you know, at camp at 9 a.m. Generally, I'm usually in the office by 9, but I know I'm it's not going to affect my impact and my dedication and my, you know, what I'm going to do at work. Yet it's going to be really impactful, you know, for me personally, to know that, you know, I dropped her off and I was the last person she saw and Dad will pick her up, you know.
But I think I think COVID has allowed us to give ourselves permission to do that.
Yes.
And yeah. I think that's what's, I think that's a game changer. I think it has probably changed the environment significantly. So for the better, we work crazy hours. Working till 11 o'clock on a Sunday night football game, is the expectation you're in the office at 9 a.m. the next morning on Monday? No.
No, right. It shouldn't be. And that's how we're going to start to see some shifts here and creating a better lifestyle for all of us, you know, I think moving forward as well. So that's great. And then to close things up, I would love to ask, you know, what advice do you have for our listeners who are looking to grow their career in sports, specifically down the revenue path? And because this is Women Blazers, if you have anything specific that you would share with women more specifically, I would love to hear your advice that you would share.
Yeah, I would love to see more women in revenue producing roles. It's hard to find women in those roles. So I'm always encouraging that. I think simple things, perseverance, don't give up. You know, I remember one of my professors back in my early days in sports management, he said, half of you in this room will have to work twice as hard to get half as far. What on earth is he talking about? And he meant women in the room. And I could have given up sports that day because I thought, well, why did I get into sports? This is insane. But you know, whether it's a woman or a man or male, female, you know, I think perseverance, don't give up. Like I remember when I started off in sales at Disney on the business development side for the first 6 months. So I was in charge of bringing events to Disney. I cold called hundreds of sporting events and different organizations, and I did not get one event to come to Disney for the first 6 months. And I thought, oh dear, they've just started this business development department. I haven't done anything yet. In fact, our whole department hasn't brought anything in. And so, but then at month six, guess what? The hard work paid off. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't give up. And then all of a sudden, 3, 4, 5 events started to come in. It just takes time. And so in sales, especially maybe when you're not in transactional sales, like more ticket, it can be seen as more transactional, but the long, you need a bit of a longer runway for larger corporate partnership deals. And they take time. You know, at Disney, our average corporate partnership alliance deal took 18 months to 2 years to come to fruition. And so I always say, don't give up early in sales. You may not have wins early on, but it's the hard work leading up to that. The hard work will pay off. So don't give up. I would also say, be a student of the industry and never stop learning. I think you've heard me say that a couple of times. It's really important. Especially in revenue, you've got to know what's out there, be on the pulse of what's happening, what, you know, in ticket sales, you know, you're going to be on the pulse of a new company that's opening up in your city. Like they might be a prime target for tickets. And then my final thing is, you know, take risks. Sometimes in your career, it doesn't have to be a ladder and progress vertically up that ladder. And sometimes the best progressions in your career may come from going sideways or perhaps even trying something new like I did, working in a theme park, selling sponsorships. So, you know, to be honest, leaving sports, that pivotal change in my career, leaving sports and working in a theme park for 5 or 6 years, it was scary as hell, but it gave me skills that allowed me to then progress in the sports industry. So take risks, you know, try things new, try it out. Even if you're not qualified for a position, you know, apply for the job, because you know your male counterparts are applying for the job if they're about 60% qualified, whereas women are more cautious and won't apply for something until they're 110% qualified for the position. So that's why I say take risks. I think there's a lot of opportunities out there if we have our women out there taking risks.
Thank you, Catherine, for that incredible advice and so many takeaways and insights we're gaining today from this conversation, personally for me, and I hope for everyone who is listening today. Thank you again for being a guest on this podcast and all that you do for our industry.
Oh, it was a pleasure. I really enjoyed talking to you. Thank you. Hope our paths cross again.
And that's a wrap on episode 28. Thank you to Catherine for sharing her experiences and insights with all of us today. And as a thank you, our friends at Turnkey ZRG has purchased a 1-year membership for her to join the Pro Sports Assembly, an industry member-led association helping advance equity in pro sports. Now, as always, I invite you to follow us on Instagram at Women Blazers to stay connected and to engage with the Women Blazers Network. And look forward to episode 29 featuring Crystal Hogan, Vice President of Ticket Sales and Service for the Los Angeles Clippers of the NBA. Until next time, have a wonderful week.